I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, I told y'all last week I was finna watch Nope. So I watched Nope, and I'm finna talk about it. Okay, I'm going to talk about other things first. Like I saw the Wakanda Forever trailer. I'm finna talk about that. I'm finna talk about local politics as well. You know, Baltimore State's attorney's race. You know what I mean? Race for governor, Maryland governor. You know, I'm going to talk about those things. But I am definitely spoiling Nope. I need you to receive that. I'm going to spoil it. It has, by the time you are listening to this episode, it has been, if you include Thursday, because you know that's the pre-release before the main release on the Friday. Okay, by the time you are listening to this episode, Nope, Jordan Peele's Nope, has been out for a full 7 days. Okay? If you have managed to dip and dodge spoilers on social media, TikTok is just lousy with spoilers. And people be acting cute too. Like, anyway, listen, I'm not one of those people who mind spoilers unless, no, because even if you tell me like the main idea and like the big secret, the turn in the film, I'm still going to watch it because I want to understand the lead up to the turn. I want to understand how the movie got me to the turn. Because half the time, even if you know what's coming, half the time the joy of it is getting to it, even though you know what's going to happen. And you know from the trailers for the most part, from some of the interviews with Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer and Jordan himself, you kind of know what some elements that are in this movie, but you definitely do not know how we get there or what the heck happens when we're there. That's not something you know. And also, I'm going to just tell you this. I'm only going to tell you this, all right? Listen up. If you don't want to listen to any more spoilers, I'm going to just say this one thing. No, I can't even say that because that's going to spoil. All right, so here's the deal. For everybody who doesn't want to hear the spoilers, I'm going to talk about my feelings about the Wakanda Forever trailer. I'm also going to talk about local politics here in Maryland and Baltimore. And then I'm going to do what I normally do. I'm going to cut the segment. I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to walk right into Nope. All right? So you're going to have at least 15, 20 minutes of spoiler-free content. But if that's still not enough because you just don't trust me, and I understand, because people be slipping in spoilers without letting you know, and I was finna tell you one that is just, it blew me in the film, but it's not a spoiler, but it's enough to kind of, well, actually it is kind of a spoiler, so I'm not finna tell you that. See, look how I'm negotiating with myself, right? So I'm not going to do that to you. So I'm going to give you 20 good minutes of no spoilers. But then when I get to Nope, I'm absolutely spoiling the mess out of it. Because when I tell you, here's the thing. You know, movies are movies, right? Right? They're fantasy. Even if they're based on reality, there's embellishments. But I told you, I am a person who watches scary films, but I'm a scaredy cat. How does that work? I don't know. You're going to have to ask God about it, because I cannot explain it to you other than it's like, I can't help it. And I'm not even saying that this is a scary film, but remember now, if you've been listening to me for any length of time, anything that's spiritual, anyhow linked to spirituality or otherworldliness is scary to me. Because I'm thinking, anyway, so we'll talk. And again, now that I didn't spoil, I ain't spoiled Jack, because you've listened to interviews, you've seen the trailer, okay? You already know what time that movie is on, right? So it's not, I haven't spoiled anything for you yet. Anyway, let me move along, because I feel a spoil coming, and I don't want to do that to people who don't want to hear it. So anyway, But let me hasten on. So I've thoroughly warned you about the tenor of the conversation when I get to know. I'm just letting it all hang out. There are myriad episodes that you can listen to. I was looking at the analytics the other day. And one of my most popular episodes that people still listen to today is Watch Out for the Big Girl. Also, the one about Juneteenth. I know that's not topical right now, but like the Juneteenth one, probably because I do a little bit of a story. And that's probably why people listen to it. Somebody told me that a teacher used it as an explainer, as part of their explainer to a lesson that they were teaching with their kids, which I think is wild. But anyway, but the Juneteenth one is short. And that was like years ago. Also, people listen to the Afropunk one. That time I went to Afropunk and I talked about it. What's growing in popularity, or at least I'm seeing grow over time, is, and I wish there was a way that I could categorize all of my podcast episodes in such a way that you could listen to the things that you wanted to listen to or that was most attractive to you. Because some of my ones about short stories, reviewing sci-fi books and things, people really responded to that. And I just don't have a way of organizing that. If you do, let me know. Leave me a comment. Send me a message via the app. A voice message via the app, because I genuinely don't know how to do that. And I have so many episodes that at this point, I just want to categorize it. And also, it just would help me to make sure that I'm not, at this point, I'm getting into the territory where I could easily start to, because of I basically talk about pop culture, but specifically sci-fi books, film, TV. That was a wild way of saying F-I-L-M, film. Wow, country. Anyway, politics. And even though I try to keep it fresh, I think I don't want to repeat the way I'm talking about it, because that can be boring. Plus, it's just me and it's hard to keep track of stuff. So I wish there was a better way to organize these podcast episodes, but I don't know it just yet. So anyway, but do yourself a favor. If you like talking about sci-fi books, which, by the way, I got a few on deck, so stand by for maybe some mini episodes about, depending on how I feel, because I might have to do that in August, because September is my centennial year for Sigma Gamma Rho, and so I can't promise. I'm just gonna have to keep it topical. I'm gonna have to keep it current events in September, October, and November, but I can kind of fly and spread my own wings and probably go back to like the short stories back in December. But like September, October, and November, I just can't promise that I'm going to be able to do some of that content. So, but just know that it's on the horizon, because I've been reading some interesting things. And I want to talk about them largely because of films like The Woman King. Is it The Woman King? What's that one with Viola? When the trailer came out and Viola was like, oh my God, she was so great. I love Viola Davis. I love Viola Davis because, man, when you see an actor that just lets loose, like for real lets loose, not an actor who's fine playing in that the role that they kind of look, how can I explain this? All right, you know, Owen Wilson. He kind of plays the burnout. Like he's an old, he looks like a surfer. Like at this point, he looks like an old surfer, like an old school surfer. He's in his close to his 50s, but like he looks like a beach bum, right? Just spends all his time on the ocean, or as they say over here, down the ocean, and surfing and whatnot. Like that's kind of how he looks. And that's kind of the roles that he kind of plays. And if you noticed, what was that Amazon role that he played, that movie where he played in opposite Selma Hayek? I cannot remember the name of it, but it was supposed to be something like a time travel sort of thing. It felt foreign to me to see him in that role, which is why it just didn't work for me. It barely worked for me. Selma Hayek's role barely worked for me. Now, mind you, maybe I'm in a minority on this, but that movie really didn't work for me, largely because I'm so used to seeing Selma Hayek as like the sexy bad woman, you know what I mean? Or damsel that's not really a damsel because she can take care of her own self sort of thing, but like in the bombshell sort of role. And so to see her not that way just didn't really do what I needed it to do for me. And largely that's because I'm so used to seeing her in other ways. Same way with Owen Wilson. I'm so used to seeing him in the like burnout role or the irresponsible fun good time guy role that it's hard to take him seriously, right? Who else? You can fill in the blank. There are tons of actors who are kind of typecast at this point, and it's not, I wouldn't blame it on them. I would just say that, you know, the acting is their job, and while it's fun to do something you love to do, there's also an element in that, if that is literally your livelihood, you got to do, sometimes it's hard for you to take chances. And I'm not saying that there are different classes of actors, because if you are an actor, part of it is luck, part of it's the way you look, and part of it's your delivery, because you cannot tell me that there are not 100 other Viola Davises where she exists in the film industry. You cannot tell me that there are not 100 other Chris Evanses. There are. It's just there's a cocktail of who you know, right timing, right look sort of thing, and who the Hollywood executives are. We all know that they're biased. We all know that, you know, anyway, I won't go into the Hollywood film industry, especially since I'm not really in it. So I'm kind of talking about it from the outside. But even listening to actors that I follow on social media talk about it, even in their careful way of talking about it, you get the sense that it's talent is not enough. But let's be for real, when has talent ever been enough in any profession? Literally in any profession, when is talent not enough? You mean to tell me there are no other could be NFL or NBA or baseball players, hockey players, soccer players, any other sort of sports you can think of? You mean to tell, but it, you know, the big three here in the United States, football, soccer, basketball, right? The big four. Football, soccer, basketball, well, football, basketball, baseball, soccer. Tennis is huge. Anyway, you get my point. Like, in all of those, I knew D1 state champions in basketball. Go to the football. I knew more football players, D1. And for those of you who are outside of the United States, if you don't know what the divisions are, D1 is the largest division, and it's got the most schools in it. It's got the bigger schools in them when you're talking about college. Also tends to have the best talent, the better talent. And so I've known countless D1 stars in my lifetime. Like, even now, I still know folks who were D1, all state, getting all the prizes, but never made it to the pinnacle of their sport, track. I know, I can't even tell you how many people who were really great in track and field sports, but just for whatever reason, it didn't happen. So again, I say, well, not for whatever reason, there are a number of different factors that contributed to that, but talent alone does not get you to where you want to be. And so when I look at actors like Viola Davis, I'm thinking, I've seen her look so many different ways. Like, when I tell you, she's done TV, she's done big screen, she's done small screen, she's done plays, the stage. Those require different aspects of your main skill. That's the equivalent of, you know, playing pickup ball to summer league to semi-pro to pro. Like, they're different. For the most part, there are different skill sets that you tap into I will say this. You could phone it in different levels because different levels require less of your skill set. Obviously, the pinnacle of whatever you're doing requires the very best of you. And so I say, when you're thinking of How to Get Away with Murder, a TV show, I would not put that on the same level as a film that is in Oscar contention, right? You could literally just phone it home. You could. But Viola didn't do that. And when I tell you bad wigs and the way that she acted, I was just like, girl, you a little rough around the edges. You smart, but you a little rough around the edges. But then to see her in different roles where she's not rough around the edges, where she's vulnerable and where she's just playing different. She's tough. Like in this iteration, like she's played a tough woman before. I cannot remember the name of the movie, but Liam Neeson was her husband, and then he faked like he was dead. He was murdered, and I can't call the name of it, but he acted like he was dead, only he wasn't dead. He was just playing her. Anyway, so she's played a tough woman before, a woman scorned before, but in this Woman King one, she's not a woman scorned. She's just a warrior. And just a warrior sounds like kind of crazy, right? But I'm excited to see her in this way. I've never seen her before because it feels like a chance that could fall flat if you don't get the thing right. But what I'm hearing is, like Ma Rainey, by the way, her role in Ma Rainey, like you can, she said she gained a lot of weight, and there's a lot of debate about, I don't know there's a lot of debate so much as there are a lot of opinions on the way that she looked. But I don't know if she was wearing a suit that made her appear larger than she was, plus she gained weight. But the mannerisms that she has, and I certainly talk about Ma Rainey's Black Bottom in one of the episodes from this year, I think, or whenever it came out. It must have been last year, something like that. Anyway, I talk about it. But her performance there was something so familiar to it that's hard to do. When you watch an actor and the role that they play is familiar, and it's not a role that they typically play, like it's not one that you've seen them in 1,000 times, that's special to me. And so I'm eager. While I've seen Viola as a tough woman, I've never seen her as a warrior whose vocation is war. And so I'm eager to watch it. Not to mention, I believe it's coming out around the same time that Wakanda Forever is coming out, which, by the way, I watched that trailer and cried. And I think that was what was supposed to happen. It was supposed to elicit emotion out of it because we're all raw steel. Anybody who's a fan of the Wakanda of Black Panther, we're all raw. It still feels like it wasn't very long ago that Chadwick Boseman was online. He was looking a little thin. Like even in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, or is it Big Black Bottom? Can't call it. Anyway, he was thin, but he still looked like he had a little bit of meat on him. You know what I mean? And then to know that he progressively got smaller because he was fighting cancer. And then he lost his life. And I appreciate him not having this conversation publicly because the amount of pressure that is on famous people anyway to share is a lot. And they make it seem like it's easier than it is. But think about you in your worst moment. And then think about you having a following of 100,000 people who want to know what's going on with you. That must be exhausting, right? And so for him to let people in only but so much and then to stop it from there, to keep that quiet, I think of Virgil Abloh for all of the memes and all the ways that people made fun of him and stuff like that, was secretly also dealing with an illness of his own that he succumbed to that nobody knew about. And I thank God that he was able to keep it quiet, even though that was probably a feat in itself. But I couldn't imagine being public about an illness that was working to take my life. that the amount of energy and be famous and try to do other things, I wouldn't think that there would be much room for anything else. Do you know what I mean? And so anyway, people who were moved, that I don't have to tell you this, but if you're not a part of the African diaspora, there was a, for a moment, and even now, I think our embrace globally, the African diaspora's embrace of Black Panther film, and I don't think I'm speaking too, I don't think I'm being too wild here when I say, I think our total and our global embrace of Black Panther led to the success of some of our, these artists who are coming from Nigeria, who come from Ghana, who come from certain countries in the, and who are coming from African countries, who are making it big globally. Like, I think there's a coincidence there. I think that that doorway, and it sounds silly to say this, but I don't think I'm wrong here. That global collective hug that we had through the Black Panther film, I mean, did it stop diaspora conversations? Absolutely not. Were people still hollering about whose jollof rice was better? Of course, because we gonna do that. We gonna always do that. That the movies and media does not heal centuries old, or at least generations old, rifts that have been caused. We don't even know what, well, we know a lot of the rifts are, the base of them are the white supremacist and anti-Black, right? And diaspora fighting due to anti-Blackness. There was a whole piece about Egyptians or North Africans disassociating certain North African, country people disassociating with their Africanness, which that wasn't a conversation that I could even, I was just sitting on the side talking about, dag, that's messed up. But it's a conversation that you can't get through until you have, you go through the thing that you need to get through. You know what I mean? You can't get where you need to be without going through. I wish that it was different, but it's not. And so anyway, but nevertheless, I cannot ignore the fact that I just think that the huge success of that film and the artists from African countries who were on the soundtrack helped open the door to what we're seeing now. Burner Boy, what else would have been? You can't tell me I keep wanting to say Wakanda Forever. You can't tell me that film, Black Panther, did not open people's ears, open music execs' ears, because certainly it starts with the music exec and the music companies, the labels, taking a what they consider to be a risk on a talented artist. Because again, it's not about talent. If that were true, there would be some artists that would not, we would never have heard of it would, if it was about talent. Why the heck is Jay-Z more, like, never mind, let me not have that conversation. If it was solely about talent, there would be certainly, just thinking about rap, there would certainly be artists that you would have heard of, and some of the artists that you have heard of now, you would never have known them if it were solely about talent. But it's not solely about that. So anyway, I think Black Panther, it can be, and Ryan Coogler and his, and all of those actors and all of the people who had a hand in that film, are Casey Lemons, are part of the reason why we do have a Burner Boy, why we do have Jerusalem, that song. Why is that the new Cha-Cha Slide? Why is Jerusalem the new Cha-Cha Slide? Like, for real. I know Nigerians are everywhere. I think the artists are Nigerian. I know Nigerians are everywhere, but like, for real, why is that a top song where your granny all the way to the babies are playing and everybody's strolling? It's because there was a door opened, and now because music execs who are gatekeepers, and also social media has played a role into this too, but because our minds have been opened largely due to Black Panther, I believe, we are as globally more accepting. And I'm not saying we as in the American we, I'm literally saying globally we're more accepting. Globally. Because again, the diaspora is everywhere. The African diaspora is literally in every single corner of this globe. And when I tell you, for sometimes when you're dancing, or at least I know I'm not the only one, so don't leave me out here. Don't leave me out here by myself, but I know I'm not the only one. Sometimes when I'm dancing to some of these songs, that I feel connected to everybody in the diaspora. Even if we don't all vibe to this song, there's just something about the way that some of my kindred, because typically these days when I'm dancing to it, it's usually in Black Greek spaces. And so, of course, all of the Black Greek organizations have, not only do we have chapters in countries in Africa, but we're continuing to get more chapters and countries in Africa. And so as a result, we've got a lot of undergrads and alumni members who are first generation, or not even, first generation Americans. No, they're new immigrants. They're part of the new immigrant family, or they're first generation American. They're either new immigrants themselves or first generation. And so I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I like it. And there feels like a connectivity here more than I've ever felt in my whole life. Because growing up, I was told and I felt that people in my diaspora, but from the African continent, did not like people like me, Black Americans. And that's not to say that there is not some of that anti-Black Americanness or anti-Africanness, because they just lump it all into one. It's not to say that that does not exist. You know it do. But at the same time, I don't think I've ever felt more openly connected and unabashedly connected to more people in my diaspora than I've ever felt in my whole life. And I think it's largely due to the success of Black Panther, and I will stand on that. And so to see the trailer for Wakanda, to see that we are all collectively still trying to heal. And I was one of the reasons why I was reminded of this is because, I follow a lot of folks in the African diaspora on TikTok. And so my TikTok is blackity black, 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 with some sprinkles of brown and white and brown again. But it's blackity black, black, black. And so, of course, I follow a lot of folks from South Africa. I mostly follow a lot of comedians, but from South Africa, Kenya. Is that one person from Chad? I can't call it. Anyway, and Nigeria, of course, like, duh. Like, let's be for real. Nigerians are everywhere. Anyway, and there's one particular woman that I... No, is she from Tanzania? I cannot remember where she's from. And I will put her name in the show notes, but I will put her name in the show notes. But she had just seen the trailer for Wakanda Forever. And as she was talking, she began to be full. Just full with emotion. And then I became full with emotion too, because I'm like, yeah, it's about to be one of those. Hubby watched the trailer. He came home from work and asked me if I watched the trailer. Because he already know what time we're on. We watching the movie. And so we're all going to collectively cry. We're going to cry because they're going to give us that cathartic moment. I feel it because you saw it in the trailer. They're going to give us our moment to cry about Chadwick. And then we're going to get to the getting to. Women doing raw stuff. What's old girl's name? Deny. You know who I'm talking about. The main war chief who the actress that played in Walking Dead. You know who I'm talking about. I can't call her last name, but deny. Anyway, Letitia Wright, she in there. Not too much, girl, because we all remembered your thoughts and feelings. I really don't want to hear your perspectives on things. Let's just get to the acting. And then, of course, you got Angela Bassett. Oh, that moment. Oh, my goodness. So we'll see. We'll see what's about to happen. And I'm not, although I watched the comic, or I watched the cartoon, the BET cartoon, Black Panther. Remember that came out in like 98, something like that. I remember watching that. I don't remember all of the characters. So I guess I should look up, I'm probably not going to look up nothing. And I will let other TikTokers tell me about who's in the film, or like what characters I should be paying attention to, because it's clearly leading up to some sort of rift between two women. But it's like not... like powerful, like queens, warring with each other. So there's going to be some kind of conflict while they're dealing with the grief and, you know, and trying to build a new Wakanda, or trying to carve out what life is like post T'Challa. Because you certainly cannot replace Chadwick Boseman. Like, anyway, we not finna do this anyhow. And so I'm glad that it appears that they have not replaced Chadwick Boseman. I have done no research on this film at all. It was supposed to have come back. It was supposed to have come out this summer, but of course they pushed it. Last year they had pushed it to November. And I can't remember if it's coming out the weekend of Sigma Amaro's centennial, like our true centennial, November 12th, or not. Because something told me it was the 22nd. I thought it was the 22nd of November, but I'm thinking some people are saying it's the 12th. Anyway, we'll see, because I'm definitely going to be, you know, doing my due for the sorority. But at the same time, I absolutely do want to see this film, and you better believe I want to talk about it. But anyway, oh my goodness, lots and lots. And I think the last thing that I want to share is Marilyn Mosby conceded defeat to Ivan Batts for the state's Baltimore City state's attorney. And to that I say, I don't know why she thought she was going to win. She's third. She's behind Vignu, what's his name? Vignaraja. I can't call his name, but he's awful. They're literally, you are third to one of the dudes. You are behind one of the dudes who sent the nastiest texts and voicemails to some of his staffers. How he get third and you, how he get second and you got third? Vig, is it three? What is his name? Vignaraja. I can't call his name, but he's an awful person. He seems like he, based on those texts, those wild texts that he sent to some of his staffers that were made public like mid-campaign, he is an awful entitled person. And he even kind of comes off as comes across as somebody that you probably shouldn't trust to do more than to further his own career. He comes across very slimy to me, but runs on Law and Order. But dude looks like a slime ball, because he probably is a slime ball. Like, well, at the very least, that behavior alluded to the fact that he had some slime ball behavior. Those text messages, if they're fake, I'm sorry that that happened to him. But if those are real, you are a scumbag. And so anyway, how you come third to him unless you just did not have the will of the people? And my thing is, how arrogant. How arrogant. You didn't have, you couldn't do no research. There's a reason, but you did not see this coming at all. Like, how did you not see it coming based on all of the questions that we had about you, dear? Like, how did you not see this coming? So it's what it is. And so Ivan Batts will certainly, Baltimore City is majority Democratic. That's just how it is. So typically speaking, unless there's huge mistrust in the Democratic candidate, the Democrat typically takes it. And so I don't think, unless something wild comes out about Ivan Bates, he will be Baltimore City's next state's attorney. And he's been around for a while. If you watched any of the documentaries or any of the shows about Baltimore on HBO, Ivan, or at least this last one, We Own This City, Ivan Bass was represented in this. He's like a real-time person because he's a state. He's been a political figure for a minute. He's just been in the cut a little bit. And so I think he struck while the iron was hot, because, again, he knew the perception of Vignaraja. He knew the perception of them. And so he kind of wasn't too much studying him. And if you look at the race, I don't even think it's close between him and Vignaraja. I think the emphasis was on the fact that Mosby fell to number three behind Vignaraja. And then Wes Moore wins the Democratic nod for the governor of Maryland. And I'm wondering how that's going to work out. A lot of people are thinking that he's going to take it. And we have even our own Governor Hogan not supporting the Republican nominee because he's wild, to say the very least. And so who knows, man? We know that Trump is finna back him, because Trump is trying to, you know, Trump is trying to run again in 2024. And so he's trying to throw his weight around to try to support, you know, get allies, you know, same old trick, same old, same old. And I just don't know how it's going to play out. But many people are saying that Wes is going to take it. And so we'll have, if I'm not mistaken, we'll have our first black governor. We may have our first black governor in a minute. First black governor. First Black governor of Maryland. What? Oh, girl, wait a minute. So I don't think that Maryland has ever had a black governor. No, that's not true. Douglas Wilder. Don't know when he served. But so Westmore would not be the first black governor for Maryland, but he will be one of the first in a very long time. Okay. Yeah. And so you got magazines like New York Magazine saying with headlines like Westmore looks set to become next governor of Maryland, and CBS News saying, nope, that's just it. That's it. Yeah. Anyway, so we'll see. Like I said, barring some wild scandal, that might be it for your boy. You know what I mean? He might be governor. And so we'll see. That might be interesting. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But anyway, all right, I've talked enough about everything else. Again, I say this is the end. If you don't want spoilers for Nope, find another episode to listen to, because I'm finna spoil it. All right, so when I come back, it's all about the particulars. You know how I do it. All about the particulars. Box office, all of that stuff. All of the box office data that's out up to this point. Who's in it? And then just get right on into it and then just talk about that film, all right? So when I'm back, all about Nope. Okay, good listeners, by the time we are here, hopefully we've reached the point where only people who have either seen Nope and want to listen to other takes on it, or just generally enjoy people talking about the film that they've already seen, or you don't care about spoilers and you're going to watch it anyway, or you were never planning to watch it. Either way, you just wanted something to listen to while you did a thing. Hopefully, these are the only people listening at this point. Okay, so I'm going to hit the particulars first and then go right on into it. I'm going to be all over the place because this, I'm trying not to hurry up and get to the part where I just want to talk at length about. So just bear with me. Okay, so Nope was released July 22nd, 2022, which is last week. Its runtime is 2 hours and 10 minutes. It was directed by Jordan Peele, distributed by Universal Pictures. At least July 22nd was the U.S. release. What do I want to say? Let me do it this way. So the runtime is, wait a minute. What is it? Is it the runtime 1 hour and 31 minutes, or is it 2 hours and 10 minutes? It didn't feel like a 2-hour movie, but I wouldn't put it past them to be a 2-hour. I don't know. I can't tell you what the exact runtime is. Right now I'm looking on their wiki and it says 131, but I feel like it was a little bit longer. Only because it was a lot of content. It was good content, but it just felt like longer than an hour or 131 minutes. Anyway, no, 131 is 2 hours and 10 minutes, weirdo. 60 and 60. Okay, my goodness. All right, my bad. Y'all ignore me. The budget was $68 million, and to this point, by the time I'm reading this, now mind you, this is a week later. It's the box office was 54.6. So it's going to make its money back. But it might be one of those slow burns, and this will definitely turn into a cult classic. I'm sure of it. Okay. What else do I want to say? The movie stars Daniel Kaluuya as OJ, or Otis Jr., Kiki Palmer as, what's it, Lilac? No. What's Kiki's name? Emerald. Kiki Palmer as Emerald. Steven Yeun plays, who does he play? Ricky. Ricky Park, who was a, all right, so, okay, Ricky Park. And then Keith David, who is a legendary black actor, black American actor in Hollywood, legendary Hollywood actor. Just about anything black related, he's been into it, even things that are not black related, but like Capers. I don't know that he has a specialty, but like he's got one of those like meaty voices, like steak and potatoes with red wine voices that, you know, you enjoy hearing. He does voiceovers for games. You've heard him in some of these role-playing games and shooter. I don't know about the shooter, first-person shooters, but like definitely like the World of Warcraft type games. He does work there. I think he's done work. I think at one point, wasn't he like a cartoon version of Batman? Like he voiced Batman in one of the cartoon shows. Obviously, you know, he's all the way over on BET and all of that, but he's got a very storied acting career, and I just wanted to take that moment to give him his flowers. Not that he would ever be listening to this episode, but anyway. Outside of that, there are some other people, but I really don't care about them. You can look them up. But I'm going to predominantly focus on OJ, Emerald, and Ricky for a second. Wait a minute, what's Keith David's? Otis Sr. So anyway, okay, so that's who it stars and that's who they are playing. I will get back to the why in just a minute. Okay, what else do I want to tell you? Let me give you the, I think what I want to do is I want to give you the synopsis. And the synopsis is hold on. Okay, let me try it again. And there's a piece while I'm thinking about this. You need to know that this movie is set in the 80s. Now, I don't know why it's set in the 80s. It just is. And again, this is a Jordan Peele movie where you're going to have to watch it more than once. Because I'm sure that they said the why. It's just I missed it. If you did not miss the why, be sure to leave me that comment or leave me that voicemail, because I missed it. And I don't know when I'm going to be able to watch the thing again, because I'm certainly not going back to the theater. Just because, like, hopefully it'll come on HBO Max soon, and then I'll be able to watch it from home to understand exactly the why. And I'm certainly not going to read through, like, someone's interpretation of the plot, and I'm not going to do all of that. But anyway, I'm trying to tell you the synopsis, and it's not coming. Oh, okay. So the synopsis of the film is two siblings who run a California horse ranch discover something wonderful and sinister in the skies above, while the owner of an adjacent theme park tries to profit from the mysterious otherworldly phenomenon. Okay. So Otis Sr. is the father to Otis Jr. Duh. So Keith David's Otis Sr. is the father to Daniel Kaluuya's Otis Jr. and Emerald, and Kiki Palmer's Emerald. And the park owner is the actor who I just named. Steve Yeun plays, dang it. See, I'm going to keep calling him Steve Yeun. And what I should be calling him is his doggone character name. And so now I got to look it back up. Ricky. Okay, hopefully I will remember that his character's name is Ricky. All right, so Ricky plays a former child star who is now a park owner. And he's capitalizing off of the nostalgia of the show that he was on, which I believe was... Well, I don't know. And see, here's another piece that I'm missing. I'll get to that in a second. But he's basically a theme park owner. It's like a Western theme park sort of affair, and he's capitalizing off of his name. Again, he was a child star, and so his name recognition is the reason why a lot of people are coming to the park. And then there are some attractions to the park too, that to the point of what the plot was mentioning, that feature the audience to engage to see this mystical, magical thing that happens in the sky. So right off the bat, let me just back up and say that in the first 20 minutes, we learn a number of different things. We learn that back in the late 80s, back in the 80s, actually, I don't think this film is set in the 80s now. No, the film isn't set in the 80s. The story, we are made to believe that the story begins in the 80s. And we're supposed to pay attention because while on the face of it, the story that we see in the very beginning seems apropos of nothing, as I'm talking it through, I get the connection. So let me explain. So, and I'm saying the first 20 minutes, we learn a lot about the film, but in the first 10, we're in 1988. We're on a sound stage, and some of which, there's writing that comes across the screen. I didn't read it. I read it, but I can't remember what I was reading. But long story short, we're on the scene. We are listening to audio. We are listening to the audio of a sound stage, and something that has gone awry. But before we get there, how can I explain this? Okay. So it's clear that we're on a set and there's some sort of studio audience, or at least a fake studio audience where, you know, you have the applause sign, or maybe there's a laugh track, an applause track that's happening. And there is actors are running lines. I don't know if they're running lines. I think they might be actually filming a scene. And anyway, this TV show, which Ricky is a cast member of, includes a chimpanzee. And if you, just pausing here for a second, if you are a millennial like me, an older millennial, even if you're like a millennial who's 30, 31, 32, you might even remember or at least see reruns of sitcoms from the 80s that included a chimpanzee in either an episode or as a recurring, that had a recurring role, or in like a live action sitcom, or with a studio audience, or cartoons that included an ape. I cannot tell you, or movies too that included for whatever reason, in the 80s, there was a lot of attention on chimpanzees. I said ape, chimpanzees, actually apes, chimpanzees, and orangutans. I can remember the original Ghostbusters, which was, I think it ran for an entire decade throughout the 80s. The original Ghostbusters included included a character that was walking around these humans. It also included space aliens, but this character, I do believe, was supposed to be a beefed up chimpanzee. Because it looked like the coloring, I've never seen a chimpanzee that had that was auburn colored. I've only seen orangutans that were auburn colored, but this particular had auburn fur. But this particular animal, I think they wanted it to be a chimpanzee, but with auburn hair. And anyway, walked and talked just like everyone else, but was definitely a chimpanzee, just with light hair. Anyway, it was called the original Ghostbusters. Now, mind you, there were two cartoons at the time that called themselves the original Ghostbusters. But anyway, this one I'm talking about, if you are of a certain age, if you are older millennial, you probably saw this cartoon, or you might know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I can also remember the dude that played in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. He was Ferris. Can't remember his name, but He played the guy who I'm talking about, played in a film in the 80s where it was talking about animal testing and testing on chimpanzees, especially for the space program. That was a huge scandal and lots of protest. I think that was when PETA was growing and starting to really get its legs. And so that film came out. There were a number of different things, but that included chimpanzees and other primates in the shows. But chimpanzees tended to be more popular because they were a little bit smaller and tended to, I don't know, I think the perception is that they tended to ham it up for the camera a little bit better than other primates. But anyway, there was, long story short, there was this huge craze to have chimps in your show in some capacity. And so the opening of Nope, this is an 80s TV show that has a chimp as a recurring, a regular cast member. And in this moment, like, there's some wacky-do thing that's happening. It sounds as if the show is about to resolve. And then, again, we see flashes of the set from behind. And it appears to be in a crouching position, like low angled. So you guys, at this point, we've well past the moment where we've broken the third wall or the fourth wall, and you know what studio audit, you know what the studio looks like. So you have a set, a sitcom set or a TV show set, and it's got three walls, and the fourth wall is where the cameras pan left and right, especially if it's like a stationary set. Or we've all watched plays, and so the fourth wall is where the audience is, and the camera, and if you're in a play, it's where the orchestra is, and so, or if the orchestra's down in the pit outside of the, just off the stage, and so, you know, it's the idea that we're watching this and we're being quiet, and it's cutesy to every once in a while an actor to engage with you, right? So it's that sort of setup. Anyway, and so we get the sense that we're towards the end, perhaps, of the episode, and there's laughing, and there's a male voice, there's a male voice that you assume is a dad, there's an adult woman's voice that you assume is the mom, there's a kid who we are to believe is Ricky's character, and then you've got the chimp making noises. Well, all of a sudden, you get a distress, there's a distress kind of signal coming from the voice that is we perceive to be the dad, and chaos. We hear thumping and things being thrown, and then we hear squishing and trigger warning. Long story short, we get the sense, based on the view that we see, again, we see flashes of the back of the view of the set from as if someone were on stage looking out at the back of the at the back of the set, crouching, hiding from the rear of the set. And so chaos. And then there's a moment in this, I don't even know if it was 10 minutes, maybe it was more like 5 to 7, but at the end of this scene where chaos is ending, we see the chimpanzee come into frame, and it is finishing off the male actor who is already incapacitated. And it's gross. And we also see a shoe, because again, there's lots of carnage on the stage. This chimp has gone, has just damaged, just torn up everything and everybody on the stage, although we know, as the audience, we know there's one person that this chimpanzee has not torn up, and it's the person whose view we are seeing. And in all of this chaos and all of this confusion about what happened, what set the chimpanzee off, why are there no police officers? Where's the studio audience? Because again, we're looking at the view of the stage from behind, and the audience section has been emptied. So it's literally just the actors that were still on stage. And what we know is nobody escaped but one person. And so anyway, so we're seeing all this carnage. We're not sure what the heck is happening other than we know some bad stuff just happened. And then we are trained to focus on this shoe that it's like a Ked. Think of a Ked, only a red top Ked. And it's standing upright, so perpendicular to the ground. So the Ked emblem, or let's just say Chuck Taylor's. So the Chuck Taylor emblem, you know how on the bottom of the trim, at the back of the Chuck Taylor is the Chuck Taylor All-Star logo, right? Well, imagine that Chuck Taylor being popped up on its on the trim, and the logo is now on the floor, making the shoe be perpendicular to the floor, right? It's just standing upright. And it's curious because why in the heck is that shoe? Your first thought is, why is the shoe perpendicular? What the heck is holding it up? And then the scene cuts, and then we're introduced to Otis Jr. and Otis Sr. having a moment. It's not a good moment. Otis Sr. is frustrated at Otis Jr. for something. They're out on this ranch in this valley. It's beautiful. The sky is the bluest blue you've ever seen, matched against the whitest, fluffiest clouds you've ever seen. And then the valley is a beautiful, lush green with lots of rolling hills. And it seems like beautiful, just beautiful, wide open space with clean air, and save for animals who are animals. And you get the sense that you're on a horse farm. Otis Sr. is on a horse and he's just fussy. He's fussing at, you get the sense that they're on, you know that they're on their ranch, Otis Sr., Otis Jr. And Otis Sr. is fussing at Otis Jr. because Otis Jr. needs to, you know, he's lacking. He needs to pick it up. Anyway, so in this moment, so they've just had an argument, or not even an argument. Otis Jr. has just been chastised by Otis Sr. Otis Jr. is walking away towards the house. You get the sense that there's something like a little corral that's maybe 500 or so feet from the home, maybe 100 feet, actually probably further than that, maybe 200 feet from the home to give their some distance. And so on this ranch. And so, Otis Jr. is walking back to, he's like halfway back in between the corral and Google Corral, if you don't know what I'm talking about. It's just a place where you temporarily hold animals, usually horses or cattle. But it's literally, you can, a temporary place to hold any sort of animal on a farm, so that you can do something, give them shots, make sure that you're tagging them, make sure that you're checking them out by the vet, like one by one or whatever. It's just a corral. Or in this concept, you get the sense that perhaps that this is a solo training corral where you only have, you take one horse. Anyway, you take one horse and you train them like one at a time. And then, so blah, blah, blue. Otis Sr. just finishes fussing out Otis Jr. Otis Jr. is halfway between the corral and the homestead, the house, when things start dropping from the sky. And we learn that it's like quarters. And they're not like just dropping. They're like, phew, pew, pew, pew. They're like bulleting to the ground from the sky. And then in this moment, we know that Otis Sr. has been struck by one of these projectiles that, come to find out, is change. And Otis Jr., he falls off of his horse. Anytime a rider falls off of his horse or their horse, that's not good. That means that the person has become incapacitated. And so Otis Jr. rushes Otis Sr. to the hospital, but it's too late. Otis Sr. is gone. And the thing that did it was a quarter to the head, which, because maybe he's in shock, maybe he's just wanting to keep a piece of his father somehow, or maybe he's just feeling morbid in this moment, but he keeps the quarter. In the the not evidence bag, but like the medical bag that it's been put in by the coroner. And so we get the sense that, yep, this the end of an era, and now Otis Jr. has to take over the operations of the ranch. And so we flash forward, and we know by based on the trailers that this is not just any Black-owned ranch. It is the Black-owned ranch whose one of their horses was the very first horse, the very first thing ever filmed in the very first movie. The very first movie ever created featured a horse, and this is a true story, featured a horse, and that horse was trained by Black wranglers and came from a Black farm, or Black farmer. We are met, so we come to know very quickly that Otis Jr. and Emerald's farm, which it's in the name of, I think, both of them. We don't really know that. I don't think we're ever really told that. But it's now their responsibility to manage this farm, which produces and trains horses that are used in the movies. Again, this is set in California. So we get to see Otis Jr. in the aftermath. We get the sense that it's been months now since Otis Sr. has passed along. And we see Otis Jr. trying to make it work, but not really being successful at it when he's on set. And he doesn't know how to do the company spiel to the people on the crew. The crew and the actors. And so his sister comes in to save the day, because it's a very awkward moment. Sister comes in and saves the day. Sister Emerald comes in to save the day, and she gives a spiel. And again, this is part of the trailer where we learn that the very first movie featured a horse that came from their ranch. So she does the spiel. And Otis Jr., or OJ, I'm going to just call him OJ. I'm going to call him Otis Jr. Otis Jr. is wrangling the horse, but something goes awry and the horse gets spooked. I can't remember if he kicks somebody or not, but the horse definitely gets spooked. And so from this point forward, you know, it's not a good look. And they part ways with the company, the studio company, the production company that had hired them. And we learn that the production company gets a iron horse to shoot the scene, and they keep it pushing. Anyhow, so you get the sense that from that moment, you get the sense that Otis is just trying to get by, trying to keep the house in order, and he doesn't have much help from Emerald, who's always trying to hustle. You get the sense that maybe she's an aspiring actress or singer or something like that, and she's just trying to find ways to get put on. And unfortunately, what's happening is she's also kind of taking her eye off the ball and supporting her brother. And so there feels to be this tension here. Now, if you were ever going to have a critique about this setup, what I would say is there was not more time exploring why Emerald isn't helping. Two things. Why OJ believes that Emerald is truly not carrying her weight. That one scene where she's late, because when I just described the scene of Otis and Emerald being on set and Otis wrangling the horse and not being comfortable talking to this group of crew members and actors, and then Emerald coming in kind of laissez-faire, swooping in and doing her little whoop-whoop-whoop spiel, and then not really finishing the job, that cannot be the only reason why he feels dejected and not supported by her. But that's all we get to see. It's like we have this instance and we see her hustling, which you can't knock the hustle, but in this context, she was hustling at the wrong time. But that instance alone cannot be the reason why Otis doesn't feel supported. So if you were going to not rate this thing higher than 70, which certainly some of the responses have been that, that's part of the reason why, because that rift between them really just isn't fleshed out. You get the sense that Emerald is a little bit flighty, but like there's not a whole lot of supporting evidence apart from that particular scene. Anyway, so the majority of the movie from this point forward really takes place on Otis and Emerald's ranch and Ricky's theme park. Now let me So we met Otis Jr. And we met Rick, Otis Jr. and Emerald. And whoop, 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 they're doing their thing. And it's at this point, and again, this is months to a year after Otis Sr. has passed away. And Otis Jr. is trying to keep the farmstead together. And so what is he having to do to make ends meet? He's having to sell horses on this horse ranch. And who is he selling the horses to? He's selling them to Ricky, who owns a theme park. And so this is how we're introduced to Ricky. Otis is trying to sell a few more horses, some of his more tricky kind of magic-y horses, so that he can pay some bills. And so we are introduced to Ricky as an adult, and we are reminded in this moment, there's an exchange that happens with them, and Ricky becomes nostalgic, and then we get a flashback, and we realize very quickly that this adult Ricky, is actually the person whose vantage point we were seeing when they were that, you know, from that low level. It was Ricky. It was from Ricky's eyes where we see what happened, and we learn, and we're like 45 minutes into the film at this point, maybe 35 to 40 minutes into the film, we learn that there was more, a little bit more to this. So yes, we saw the carnage, the chimpanzee just going after each cast member. And then we learned the reason why the chimpanzee was able to get as many people as they got was because there were doors that were locked. So you get the sense that the studio audience, if it was there, they were funneled out quickly because you do hear screams, or maybe they weren't there to begin with, but the doors exiting the stage or exiting the recording studio or the filming studio were locked. And so they were literally trapped in there. And I think if based on the voices, I'm thinking it was 1, 2, 3, 4 humans and a chimpanzee. And so again, we see the scene where the chimpanzee is just going hard and getting everyone. But what we learn is that the chimpanzee literally went one by one. And little Ricky is crouched under a table watching this and trying to be so quiet and seeing the shoe stand on its end, perpendicular to the floor, blood everywhere, carnage everywhere. We see the chimpanzee making its final attacks on some of these actors. And then we also see the chimpanzee walking around and being alerted to sounds and is alerted to a noise that little Ricky makes. And Ricky is like 9 or 10 at this point. And anyway, so the chimpanzee goes to where Ricky is crouched. Ricky's crouched under a table. Makes eye contact with Ricky and then kind of loses himself. Like whatever fever he was in, he's not in that fever anymore. He's covered in blood, but now he's made a transformation, and now he's just he's just an innocent looking creature that is also covered in blood and matter. And the chimpanzee extends his hand out. And this is, again, this is still in the flashback. Chimpanzee extends his hand out to Ricky. And Ricky's considering reaching his hand out. And I actually think he's in the process of stretching his hand out to meet the chimpanzee when the chimpanzee is struck by a bullet. So the doors that were locked, now they're unlocked, or at least one of them is unlocked, and the authorities or maybe someone from Fish and Gaming, wildlife or whatever, has put down the chimpanzee. And so we snap out of the flashback. And I think we're meant to leave this flashback by saying, you know, sometimes there isn't a reason for the thing, but the thing does happen, and then there's an end to it. There is an end to it. And sometimes that end is not pretty, but there is an end. And so we snap out of that. Otis has sold more horses to Ricky. And then we, you know, Otis and Emerald go back to the farm. You get the sense again that Emerald is kind of like a laissez-faire sort of person. And while she doesn't live on the ranch, she is asking Otis to crash there for the evening, because Otis does live on the ranch. He does live in the homestead. I guess he was living with his father at the time of his death, but that Emerald was out being free and doing, what she need, you know, just being out and being Emerald. So anyway, we get them coming back to Emerald and Otis Jr. going back to the homestead. Meanwhile, we learn a little bit more about Ricky and this theme park. This theme park is really the attractions is what happens in the sky, which tells you that whatever this phenomenon that's been happening in the sky has been happening. And Ricky's been trying to capitalize on it. And we don't know more than that. So if there's another critique about this film, I would say that I think there's something missing, and I don't remember falling asleep, and I definitely was paying attention in this moment. But we don't know how Ricky knows about this phenomenon, except to think that perhaps there's a connection to whatever's happening in the sky and whatever drove the chimpanzee to do what he did in the 80s when Ricky was on set. That's the only thing I can think of. And so that's how Ricky has been able to build a theme park and generate money. Because you get the sense that the theme park has been around for a minute. Like more than the last couple of months. You know what I mean? Like it's been around for some years. And it's playing off of, again, Ricky's name recognition, but then also a fascination with a Western. And I think it was one of the shows that he played on. And I think it was like Boy in a Hole or Boy Trapped in a Well or something like that. And one of the biggest attractions on it in the show is, or in the theme park, is people get an opportunity to take pictures looking down in a well. And that comes in handy later. But anyway, I'm curious as to why Ricky was hipped to the phenomenon. And also, did he know what was happening? Because we learned very quickly that whatever that thing was that, flashing forward to Emerald and Otis Jr., whatever that phenomenon was that killed their father is back. And things are starting to disappear. Horses are starting to be snatched up. Things are starting to disappear that from the ranch. Meanwhile, things that aren't from the ranch are appearing, dropping from the sky. And long story short, the turn in this film is we see the most terrifying, bland thing I've ever seen in my life. It's an old timey, I'm just skipping to it. It's an old time, it's like a 1950s version of what a flying saucer would look like. It is gray, but it's got a modern take on it. So the look of it, it looks like a saucer. So Google flying saucer, an image of a flying saucer from the 50s, and that's the image. It's maybe a little bit more 3D, but it's nevertheless a silver saucer. But this silver saucer has the ability to hide in the clouds, and you get the sense that it also has invisibility. And as the movie goes on and the saucer begins to suck up more things and engage more people, you get the sense that it is terrorizing this valley for a reason. We don't know what the reason is just yet. There's a piece of me that thinks the only reason why the saucer is there is because of Ricky. Its connection to Ricky. But even that connection is worn thin when Ricky is one of the... Oh, and here's the other thing. It literally vacuums up. The trapdoor opens when the saucer is over you. A trapdoor opens and it sucks people up. Now, in the moment, we don't understand how it's choosing to suck people up. As the movie goes through, we recognize that it only sucks things up that are looking at him, that appear to look at him. So there's a moment where Otis and gets some cameras installed on top of the house because he wants to overlook the homestead, specifically the corral and the land where the horses are, at least where the horses roam, because that's where things have been snatched up. He also buys a statue of a horse that is reared up on its hind legs and its head is facing the sky. And he's just testing. And sure enough, the one night you hear this vacuum sound, and it's the only way I can describe it, this huge Hoover vacuum, and the horse that he's just bought, the horse statue, was gone. And by this point, his actual horses on the farm have also been sucked up too. And here's the other thing. Now he has these cameras installed on the homestead, and this bored IT person from an IT shop becomes invested in the situation. And long story short, he gets caught up to him, Emerald and Otis get caught up in trying to escape and best this alien. And so anyhow, so the cameras do their level best to catch some of these, but not really catch some of these abductions. And again, you turned on a vacuum, like a shop vac or one of those handheld vacuums. And it's like sucking up people in a particular spot, like wherever it's almost like an infomercial, like wherever you shoot the hose is where the things are being popped up. And in this concept, again, by the time we come to the, like 20 minutes from the end, we recognize that the object is only sucking up things that appear to be looking at it. So those wiggly men that are blown up by the, well, anyway, I can't describe them. You know, when you go to car dealerships and you've got that crazy flailing thing that has arms that is, it's like not latex. It's something like a vinyl wavy man. You've seen it in commercials, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, it has googly eyes on it. And it's an attention getter. And anyway, so it's flailing its arms and whatnot. Anyway, when you deflate them, they kind of lay down. And what we know is that the homestead has their driveway leading up to the homestead is filled with these wavy people. These wavy little things. From the car dealerships, that's the only way I can describe it. I have no idea what the actual name of those things are, but everybody has seen them. Anyway, they're marketing ploys, attention grabbers. Anyway, so all these attention grabbers are on either side of the driveway leading up to this long, windy driveway leading up to the homestead. And anyway, so this saucer thing sucks those up too. And so there begins to be a plot where Emerald, Otis Jr. and the white IT guy try to survive the alien that just will not leave them alone, and then they're trying to best it. Meanwhile, tourists back at Ricky's theme park, tourists are sucked up by the droves by this same alien, which again, I feel is only there because there's a connection to Ricky. And again, I wish we would have had time. I wish we would have been given the opportunity to explore that connection, because that might have put a few more things in perspective. I feel like it was a connection, that a thread that we would have made the movie even more enjoyable, even though I felt like the movie was enjoyable. It would have made it even more enjoyable because now you get the sense that Ricky is friends with an alien, and he's like kind of feeding the alien people through his theme park. That's my theory. I don't know that it's proven, but that's my theory. Because I don't know that it's just capitalizing on seeing the alien. You know what happens when you see the alien, it's already too late. Because again, to see the alien means you're looking up at it. And half the time, unless you're looking at a distance, you're looking up at it. If it's over you, you're too late. If it's spotted you looking at it, you're too late. And so I'm thinking that the alien was in somehow embodied the chimpanzee, or was controlling the chimpanzee, or connected to the chimpanzee from the TV show in the 80s, and developed something like a bond with Ricky. And Ricky created this theme park as a way to keep his friend and keep his friend happy, which is a gross thought. Anyhow, long story short, a lot of things take place, but here's the point. The alien isn't going away, except it be vanquished in some kind of way. And so that's what happens at the end of it. I won't tell you how. I won't tell you how. But just know that Emerald, Otis Jr., and the white guy devise a plan at great risk to themselves to vanquish the alien. And it's vanquished in a very satisfying way, I will say. There's some fantastic things that happen at the end that are just a little bit too scary. Not scary, that's just a little wild for me, but it's vanquished. And you get the sense that the three of them pick up the pieces, but you don't know to what, like, are Emerald and Otis Jr. going to sell the farm? Or are they going to do a Ricky and capitalize on the wildness? What we know in real life is that people who live out in Arizona, who live out in New Mexico, where there is said to be lots of alien or unidentified object activity, extraterrestrial activity, everybody and their mother tries to capitalize on that. Roswell, if you've ever been to Roswell, New Mexico, there's like all sorts of gimmicky shops and stuff out there advertising this, advertising some sort of connection to UFOs, or giving you goggles so that like binoculars so that you can watch for UFOs in your spare time while you're there, sort of thing. Anyway, so I don't know. There were some things that Jordan could have done, but overall, I think this film is great. I do not think it's a 70%. I do think it's an 82. It's not higher than an 82. It's a good film. It's not higher than 82 for those threads. We don't know more about why Otis is disappointed in, well, or we don't really know much more about Emerald and the relationship with Otis. Even though when they were younger, they were really tight. Or at least that's what we know, that when they were younger, they were really tight, but they're not really now. And Otis, why is Otis such a grump? Also, what the heck are they going to do with the homestead now? Also, we don't know how that, like, I inferred that Ricky is the reason why the alien was there, but we don't know that to be true. I want to know more about those things. And so those threads not being sewn up, tied up, don't ruin the movie. It's just things that would have enhanced the movie. But the cinematography was outstanding. When I tell you this is a beautifully shot film, believe me. And it's cheating, honestly, because it's the scenery. It's the scenery, but the cinematographer did what needed to be done. I thought the film was very interesting, and it makes you think. Also, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to think twice when I'm on in a prairie in a valley. And there are some deep, beautiful, gorgeous valleys that exist in Western Maryland, because you're getting into the Appalachian, the Appalachian mountain chain, the closer you get to Western Maryland. And certainly if you're in Cumberland, Allegheny, Washington County, you are in the mountains, you're in the chain, the Appalachian chain. And there are some beautiful valleys, like the closer you get to Hagerstown. No. The closer you get to Frederick, when you get to like outside of Frederick, actually leading up to Frederick, you begin to see some beautiful hills and valleys. And then once you get beyond Frederick, you see hills and valleys, and then you get into the mountains. But they are beautiful. Mind you, there are some not so friendly people that are in those areas. In most of those cases, that is definitely MAGA territory in a lot of areas. But those places are, that's what, man, it don't matter. Anyway, it's beautiful out there. It's just got some ugly on the inside people that are out there. But yeah, I'm going to look twice. I'm going to think twice about being in a beautiful green valley with a beautiful blue sky, with the pillowy, softest white, off-white clouds. Because the way that that alien craft was stealth. Yeah, you gotta see it for that alone. Because the trailers don't do it justice. The trailers do not do it justice. And I've certainly left out a bunch of the nuance to how they were trying to survive, because some of that is just some, my tummy was a little bit rumbly in some of those spaces because it was nasty. I was just kind of gross, but it was a fun film, interesting film. There was a point where I wanted to walk out because I was scared, but I'm a scaredy cat, so that probably won't be you anyhow. But yeah, go see the film. It's very interesting. It's not perfect, but it's still one of those things where you got to watch it more than once. And then maybe the two things that I have questions about, maybe there were answers to them that I missed because I was too busy focused on other things. So anyway, watch the film if you have not. Watch it again if you have the opportunity, or if you're like me, let's just wait till it gets on HBO Max to watch it again. Or if you want to go back into the theater, because like I said, it's going to make its money back. It's going to make its money back for real. Like, it's probably making its money back right now, or by tomorrow, like at the day after release, the release day of this episode, it'll probably make its money back. Because like I said, it was at 60 something and it had already made, by opening weekend, it had already made 58. So it's going to make its money back. Anyway, that's enough about that. Appreciate you for listening. Yeah, I just really appreciate you, for realsies. Have a wonderful day. Please continue to take care of yourself. Monkeypox is not, does not only attack folks in the queer community, or specifically gay men. It literally impacts everyone. So if you do have an opportunity to get the vaccine, try to get it. I don't even know where to begin. I think I'm just going to go to the health department or ask my primary care physician to try to get it. You don't want it, y'all. It's not fun. It's not just for the gays. It's everybody can get it. And it literally, the thing that's tripping me out is that I need to understand a little bit more, but it can be transferable from surfaces. Remember how we thought COVID was transferable from surfaces, but it mostly just lives in the air. It's a respiratory illness. This is not that. How they're describing it is that you literally can, you get it from sweat, close contact with somebody who's all, like close physical contact with somebody who's already had it. And then also surfaces. Let's guard ourselves, y'all. Let's guard ourselves. Let's take what we need to take. I'm not going to shame anybody, but let's take our measures, take appropriate measures. This is scary, y'all. But remember, I remember listening to some podcast. I don't know if it was Radiolab or not, but talking about how certain illnesses that we've eradicated or thought to have been eradicated hundreds of years ago are coming back simply because of our practices, like our own health and hygiene practices, y'all. So let's just do a little bit better, y'all. Take care of yourself, get vaccines that you need to get, and take good care of yourself for the people around you, because even if it doesn't impact you like that, it might take somebody else out. So come on, y'all, do your part. Do your part, be responsible. Anyway, outside of that, just take care of your own mental, take care of your own mental health. Take a mental health day. Take that mental health day. Finish that project. Write that book. Start that outline. Have that conversation, because it's time. All right. Be kind to yourself. Take care. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing this with anybody that you think might enjoy it, or any other episode that you think might be cool. Appreciate you for rating this 4 or 5 stars. Anything less, you could keep it. And thank you for reviews or leaving me messages, rating the show and then leaving me messages. I will read the positive ones. If you have negative response, don't even leave it, because why would you do that? Anyway, have a wonderful day. Take care of yourself. Wonderful morning, afternoon, day, night, whatever you're listening to this. I hope you have a good one. All right. Until next time.